We are still in our series. We're coming close to seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. We're still in our series of marching through the Bible and looking at great themes as we hit particular areas. And we have been looking at the beginning of Jesus' ministry. We started way back January a year ago with Genesis 1, and now we've been marching through the Bible. Now we are up to Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and on, in some ways, the most important sermon that has ever been delivered. And it comes pretty early in Matthew's Gospel, pretty early in Jesus' ministry, before things get more complicated. And he prepares his disciples for this complication by talking about persecution, people uttering lies against you falsely as a Christian. And he talks about the complications that come from being the kind of person that Jesus seeks out as a disciple. So here we are in Matthew chapter 5. And I want to tell you a story about Martin of Wiesbaden, Germany. Wiesbaden is a city of 500,000 people. It's the capital of one of the German states. And Martin had been involved in Syrian refugee resettlement for several years. And one afternoon over coffee, he met with a dear uncle of his, a very close uncle. And the uncle over the coffee table criticized Martin for letting those kind of people into Germany and working with the evangelical, which that's the German term for Protestant, with the Protestant church in finding refugees, housing, and jobs, and language skills. And Martin happened to have in his backpack a Bible. So he reached behind him, unzipped the backpack, opened up the backpack and put the Bible on the table in front of his uncle. And he laid it on the table and he said, "Uncle, you took me to Sunday school. You were there. You were my sponsor for my confirmation. You gave me this very Bible when I was 12 years old for Christmas." And the uncle nodded. And Martin said, "Why did you give it to me? Why did you give me this book if you didn't want me to live by it, to read it?" And the uncle kind of furrowed his brow a little bit and was puzzled with his eyebrows. And Martin said to his uncle, it's in this book that I learned that Abraham was an immigrant, that God told him to leave his country and his family and his religion and go somewhere else. I learned that Jesus, Mary, and Joseph were refugees from Herod's murderous reign. I learned in Leviticus 19 and in Leviticus 24, where it says, God says, that you should love the foreigner the same as your fellow citizen. Martin looked at his uncle and he said, "Show me, uncle. Show me where it is that I'm wrong, and I'll stop. Show me where in the Bible I'm wrong, and I'll stop." And with his voice cracking with emotion, Martin said, "Why did you give me this book? Why did you give me this Bible, this responsibility? Because once I've learned from it, I can't go back. Can I really?" And that was the end of their conversation. And I honestly feel the same way about many things in the Bible, particularly the Sermon on the Mount, that once you learn about Jesus' teachings in the greatest of all sermons that have ever been delivered, you can't unlearn it. Just the same way that when you're a teenager, you learned that you cannot eat a gigantic ice cream sundae the same way you could when you were 6 years old and not suffer the consequences. I don't think I truly learned that as a teenager. I actually think I've learned that in my 40s, because when I eat an ice cream sundae, I learn that there are some consequences to it, if you know what I'm talking about. Real little kids, they learn this. They can't unlearn things, right? Real little kids are traumatized. I think every parent has gone through this. When they learn where that piece of pork comes from on their plate, They are traumatized when they learn that that little cutlet that doesn't look anything like a pig suddenly has a face and suddenly has, you know, a name in some cases. Maybe farm kids don't have that problem, but I know that my kids had that issue. And where it comes from on your plate. And you can't unlearn it. And you can't unlearn the words of Jesus' blessings and possibilities. And the world outside continually tries to struggle with these words and with these possibilities. Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, right in the beginning, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." The world says, well, if you're poor in spirit, you're depressed, you're a loser, you got to take this pill or go to this therapy. In the world's way of thinking, if you're poor in spirit, if you're down and depressed, there must be something wrong with you. Jesus says, if you're poor in spirit, the kingdom of heaven is open to you. Same thing with the very next beatitude. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. The world says, we don't have time for mourning. There's a particular time for mourning, and that time is when the viewing happens at the funeral home and once the funeral service is over, and then you got to get back to it and get over it. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. You need to get over your grief as soon as possible. That's what the world says. But Jesus says, no. The people who are mourning will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. The world says the meek are not to be counted because they're not the captains of industry. They're not the CEO of startups. We don't need more meek people. We need more entrepreneurs. We need more smart people because the meek aren't making laws in the halls of power. Yet in God's calculus, the meek will own this land, inherit the earth. A German pastor of the 20th century named Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that the key passage in the Sermon on the Mount was a little bit later than what you heard Bill read. The idea for the whole rest of the Sermon on the Mount, the key passage, or a key passage, if not the key passage, is chapter 5, verse 20. "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." And Bonhoeffer says when Jesus says righteousness surpassing the Pharisees, he really means, Bonhoeffer calls it, extraordinary justice. Bonhoeffer says he wrote a whole book called Discipleship based on the Sermon on the Mount. Bonhoeffer says that Christians are called to deeds of extraordinary justice, that is loving the unlovable, that is denial of the self, that is justice in obedience to Jesus. And it becomes very dangerous very quickly. Being obedient to Jesus at the beginning of his ministry is one thing. It's fine to say, yeah, I believe that the meek will inherit the earth. I believe that the poor in spirit will receive the kingdom of heaven. That's fine. But then, Jesus says things like, well, when somebody does something wrong to you, in verse 23, if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother or sister. Then come and offer your gift. I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. I want to hold on to my grudges. And then a little bit later, Jesus says in verse 43, same chapter 5, "You have heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your Father in heaven." Well, I really don't want to do that. And then a little bit later in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says in chapter 6, verse 24, "You cannot serve, you're not able to serve both God and money." Well, I really don't want to hear that. And then I think it probably reaches its crescendo in terms of dangerousness for the disciples in chapter 10, verse 38, when Jesus says this, Anyone who does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. I really don't like hearing that. Take up your cross. Bonhoeffer points out that the Sermon on the Mount starts kind of small with stuff we can all agree with. And then it gets more and more and more dangerous until even outside of the Sermon on the Mount, the rest of Jesus' ministry, if we're going to be obedient to Jesus' preaching, to Jesus' teaching, it's going to lead to suffering and taking up the cross, especially suffering of the innocent, because Jesus, after all, did nothing that caused him to be crucified. He was innocent. So the Sermon on the Mount is dangerous, actually. It's fun to read. It's a great thing to read and study in Bible study. But when we actually start to tease out where we go, it makes me really uncomfortable. And there's a great passage in Annie Dillard. Annie Dillard is an American writer. She wrote this in 1982 about teaching a stone to talk. That's the name of her book. And she said if we really read Matthew 5 as Bonhoeffer and Martin of Wiesbaden did, we'd be terrified of coming to church in the morning. And she uses a kind of funny image. She says that ushers should, instead of giving you a bulletin when you come in, they should give you life jackets and signal flares because you'd be afraid to come to church. She says that everybody, instead of wearing a hat or an Easter bonnet, you should get a crash helmet when you come to church because this stuff is dangerous stuff. And I used to laugh at that quote. I ran across this quote many years ago in seminary. I used to think it was funny. I thought it was kind of silly. And then I went to the Philippines, and I got to tell you this. I was a guest of honor at a worship service in the Philippines 2 years ago, and I was one of the guests of honor, sat in the front row, the front pew, as the youth were leading the worship service. And it was a play, even though I don't speak Ilocano, and it was half in Ilocano, Filipino Ilocano, and half in English. It was a play about how we need Jesus and how life is messed up. And that Jesus, only Jesus can restore us from the problems that we run into. And one of the young women from the youth group came out with a beautiful pot that was obviously handcrafted. It was gorgeous. It was very large. It was handcrafted. This particular area of the Philippines is known for its pottery work. She brought this beautiful pot. It had a plant in it. It had dirt in it. And it had a plant growing out of it. And she brought it up at the beginning of the play, talking about how the world is. God creates beautifulness. God creates the plants. God creates nature. You could even see, after it had been fired, you could still see the fingerprints, imprint on the pot. It was just lovely. And I'm sitting in the front row, and she brings it out, and to represent sin and the broken world in which we live, she takes this gigantic pot, and she throws it on the cement floor of the church, and shards of pottery go everywhere. And I'm sitting right in the blast zone. Things are flying over my head. And I thought, holy smokes, these Filipino people are serious about their worship services. Oh my goodness, when's the last time you've been in danger in a worship service? That was the last time, first and last time for me. And pot shards flying everywhere, flying shrapnel. And it made the point, better than perhaps any point I'd ever heard, that sin is dangerous, that sin costs, that God gives us something beautiful in the world, something artistic. And then sometimes we mess it up. And then, as this mess was on the floor, people came around this young woman, and they couldn't put the pot back together. It's not possible. It was in thousands of pieces. The dirt was everywhere. But they came around her, and they gave her an embrace, and they walked off together as her friend. And as the world had ground her down, at least in this telling of the tale, there was this extraordinary righteousness, this extraordinary justice, where her friends told her, "You're not alone in this. You're not alone. And we will love you, and we will bless you. And that was a pretty good example. It was a very fine example of the best sermon that's ever been preached in any language, anywhere, all over the world since the beginning of time. The Sermon on the Mount, which teaches us what it means to be called blessed. Amen.